Hi, everyone. This is Catherine Adams.
And Elizabeth Wallace. And you're listening to Binary System Podcast number 521. And tonight, we are definitely going to be talking about Season 3, Episode 4 of Better Call Saul, because I watched it for the first time, and Catherine gave it a quick rewatch to catch up. But we also wanted to mention some of the Hugo winners, so we'll get to that as well. But what we wanted to start out was that last week was one of those really brutal weeks where you're wondering what the hell is up with the Grim Reaper and why does he keep taking all the cool people?
Yeah. So first of all, we lost Dolly Parton, and that was a nasty shock. A lot of people have said she's made appearances fairly recently and seemed fine, but I have seen like people on Reddit and threads talk about the fact that cancer doesn't always look like it does in TV shows and movies, and you never know what's going on with a person and how much effort they're making to keep living their life. So, and my goodness, she had an amazingly full life. I mean, there was someone started a Reddit thread. They're from outside the U.S., and they just really wanted to know how exactly Dolly Parton came to be regarded as this absolute national treasure. And it's just, she did so much for charity. She was always nice to people. Her concerts were like this beacon of diversity, but someone described it as you would have little old church ladies and drag queens in the same audience, and everyone would be getting along because they all adored her music.
Yeah. And somebody said, you look at all, like, all the awards that she won and all of the songs that charted amazingly well and how successful she was as a musician. And after she passes, everybody is talking about how nice she was and what she did for people and everything. You know, she wasn't known for her success as a celebrity. She was known because she was such a good person.
And if you get a chance, Dolly Parton's America is a really good podcast that goes into her entire life. She went through a lot growing up poor, and she also had to experience a lot of the bad parts of celebrity status, but it never made her bitter, and she was just amazing. And it taught me that I like the song Jolene. I did not know that that song was that good, because it's, I mean, her music is a lot of country stuff, which is outside of my wheelhouse, but I really liked that.
Oh, it was such a good, I can't believe it took me until that, which came out, what is that podcast, came out like 2 years ago? This is the first time I ever heard that song, hand to God, never heard it before. I'm like, this is amazing. Wow. But of course, the Grim Reaper was not yet done.
Nope, because the next person we lost was Tim Curry. And that sucks. I remember seeing ages ago that you can like gauge a person's personality or their life experiences by which movie role they identify Tim Curry with. And for me, it was always Rocky Horror Picture Show, because I never watched the movie It that he was in.
But
you know, that wasn't the earliest thing that I saw him in, because he was the devil in the Tom Cruise movie Legend.
Yes, exactly. And I want to say, I can't remember what his name was. It wasn't, hang on, I'm going to have to look this up, because he wasn't called the devil. It starts with an L. Oh, Darkness, Lord of Darkness.
Lord of Darkness. Duh. There you go.
Yeah. Yep. Can't believe it. Yes. Every time I saw him in something, he was just wonderful. He was a guy who never phoned it in. And, you know, he had a stroke several years ago. And there's all these people talking about he would still do conventions from his wheelchair. And this one cosplayer showed up as the woman from Legend. And they told her ahead of time, when she was about ready to go and do the photo shoot with him, they said, well, you know, he's not really talking right now, so just so you know that. And she walks up and he looks at her. He says, wow, you look great. And it was just, so amazing. Oh, yeah. And that one was another one. People said that Dolly Parton was what, everybody's aunt or everybody's mom, but Tim Curry was everybody's inappropriate uncle who would do all the cool things that you wouldn't want your parents to know about, but it was still really awesome. I mean, it's just,
Goodness. I love that tribute picture. And it was a shot of Tim Curry and Sam Neill and Sean Connery from Hunt for Red October. And I think the caption was, welcome home, brother. And I'm like, my heart.
Yeah, we've lost way too many good ones in too short a period of time.
We really have.
Brings us to the third one, which happened the next day. We lost Peter Cullen, the voice of Optimus Prime.
and a lot of other voices in Transformers 2. But there's a lot of other voices in other animations, like Eeyore for crying out loud in the Winnie the Pooh cartoons. And he was another person that was always so nice at conventions.
Yeah, and I remember I got to hear him one time. He was on the floor of San Diego Comic-Con. They were doing some kind of like Transformers events and everything. And he was just on a microphone, chilling out, talking to the crowd and everything. And it was so cool to hear the Optimus Prime voice just float out over everybody. But there was Sarah Petra-Drosher made a comment because that's one of our favorite Transformers artists. And she talked about how she had really just met him at this one convention at one point. And they were backstage and she was about ready to go on stage to do this Q&A thing. And she was a little nervous. And right before she left, he told her, "You got this, Sarah." And she said, just anytime she's going through something rough, to have the voice of Optimus Prime say that to her in her head is just, it made me cry just hearing that.
Oh, God. And of course, all the tributes to him as Optimus Prime, when we already have an incredibly traumatic scene from our childhood with Optimus Prime dying.
It was a rough week when it comes to stuff like that. Yeah, I'm not kidding.
A bunch of people have been talking about the fact that the Grim Reaper, his aim is off because he's gotten some 80-year-olds that we didn't want to lose.
Yeah, wrong 80-year-old, dude. Just to kind of move off to, you know, slightly less tragically sad notes. So let's talk about the Hugo Awards. What won in this week in short stories and graphic novels and related works and movies and all that kind of stuff?
Best novel was The Everlasting by Alex E. Harrow. And that was an amazing epic fantasy with time travel. So that was, oh my goodness. Yeah, she knocked it out of the park with that one. I really like The Raven Scholar better. But I really can't say which is the better book. I think they were all really strong.
Nice. Very nice.
Best novella, The River Has Roots. That was good too. That was a fairy tale retelling, which I love, but it of course put a wonderful spin on, I think, a few different fairy tales. And that was very enjoyable. Never Eaten Vegetables was a weird one. I think you may have read that one as well.
I did. I certainly did. That was the short story. Yeah. Who was the writer of that one?
H.H. Pack. And, the best novella was Amal E. Motar, who I believe may have did something with Max Gladstone at one point.
Yeah. This is how you lose the time war.
I love that one. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
In My Country by Thomas Ha, which I remember being a rather sad one, but maybe a little bit inspiring, I think.
Mm-hmm. Is that the short story?
That was best short story. And best graphic story or comic was A Wizard of Earthsea, a graphic novel, which of course was written by Ursula K. Le Guin and adapted an art by Fred Fordham. And I know you were relieved that the ones that you had been meaning to get around to reviewing for a while did not actually win this time.
Yes, I would have loved to have seen the Power Fantasy win, but my friend Leland gave me a copy. I believe it's Absolute Wonder Woman. It's the big Wonder Woman book that came out, and it looks gorgeous, and I just haven't gotten around to reading it, and it was up for a Hugo as well. I'm like, I'm going to be mad if it wins and I hadn't read it first. But now I need to read it anyway, because I hear it's really good.
And looking through some of the categories that I pay attention to, best dramatic presentation long form was Sinners, the screenplay.
Yay!
And best dramatic presentation short form was Murderbot, All Systems Red, which I have not tried out yet, but I've read several of those books. And man, has that got a loyal fan base. So that didn't surprise me when I saw that one.
No, indeed. And I hear Ursula Vernon was the toastmaster or the presenter or whatever at a lot of the Hugo Awards. There's lots of comments about how she has a fabulous hat.
Oh, does she? Okay, that's cool. And I was a little surprised that she didn't win anything this year, but I guess that's convenient if she's a presenter. Maybe I don't know if she was ineligible to win anything because of that, or just how it worked out.
I don't know. But the fabulous hat thing, you know what that's a reference to?
No, I don't think so.
You remember all the nonsense with the Hugo's a few years ago, where this one guy, Dave, had like disqualified some people just to like play nice to China or something.
Something weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Lied about all the spreadsheets. It was all this real big thing. So he was banned from the next Hugo's. Maybe all of the Hugo's, but certainly the next one. And the next year, he had actually snuck into the hotel where the Hugo's were. And I guess he was going to various events or whatever. But he runs into Ursula Vernon. Now, she felt like her win that year, that he had done all that, that her win didn't count because she felt like he had disqualified people who were better writers than her.
I remember so, that, yeah.
Yeah, having to put an asterisk by her name just really made her mad. So when she saw him, apparently she lit into him and just really, like, people were watching, said it was just kind of amazing. But nobody really wanted to get her into trouble and everything and say it, like, officially that she had done that. So the person who had talked about it said, oh, yes, someone, this one woman, don't know who she is, just ripped a strip off of him. Who was this mysterious woman in her fabulous hat? Every time they mention Ursula, now they talk about her having a fabulous hat.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. But anyway, we will have a link in the podcast description to all of the Hugo nominees with links to all of the reviews that Catherine has done and all the reviews that Hugh has done. And I think like the one that I did.
Yay, so, you're helping.
Yay, I'm helping. Woo. But we will have a link for that in the description.
Cool.
Okay, now we are going to jump into Better Call Saul, Season 3, Episode 4, and that starts out with, we're getting a lot more back information about the whole thing, like how did Hector and Gus Fring get at odds with each other? So Hector and his flunky are meeting with Don Eladio at his pool.
That was where Don Eladio got murdered with all of his henchmen by Gus, right?
Oh, yes, I think you're right. That's exactly right, yeah. Now, Don Eladio, he is a guy who really likes to taunt people. And then Hector and his flunky have brought, like, rolls of $100 bills to give to Don Eladio to show him how successful the ice cream company they've made has been. They give him, like, this little bobblehead doll and everything. But then a guy named Bolsa shows up, and he's got two duffel bags with literal bricks of money. And it's money from Gus Fring and Los Pollos Hermanos. And Don Eladio is just taunting Hector and needling at him and showing, oh, look how much better they're doing. And you can just tell by the end of the conversation, Hector just wants to murder somebody.
Yeah, and I think it's probably just as well that Gus Fring was not able to make this little meeting, because I don't even know if Don Eladio likes Gus better than Hector, but Hector was there as a target, and he figured out a way to make him feel small. And you can tell Don Eladio loves doing that, but I don't think it saves Gus for long, because Hector does actually go to confront Gus to throw his weight around later in the episode.
Yeah, seriously. So we switch from there. The police are at the ice cream shop because, of course, Mike, last episode, found a way to powder cocaine all over the truck of Hector's ice cream company so they could get him in trouble. Mike is back a safe distance watching all this go down, and he calls Stacy just to sort of check in with her. And she invites him to dinner. You can tell she is so, so grateful because, you know, she's his son's wife. And he got them this house in a really nice neighborhood. And he likes hanging out with them. He likes hanging out with the kid. And I'm so worried because in the kind of profession that Mike's in, it's not good to have people that you care about.
No, and also I'm sure a lot of this is Mike. He's going to be trying for the rest of his life to make up for the fact that before his son got murdered, his son had to realize that the father that he adored was actually a dirty cop, like he had always told him not to be. And it's just, yeah, he's never going to get over that.
Nope. We switch to Los Pollos Hermanos, and Hector comes in and he's harassing the staff because he wants them to get Gus Fring, and he's not going to leave until they do. And there's this young kid who's actually standing up to him. Lyle, I think his name is. He's being surprisingly tough for being just some kid behind a register of a fast food place. But Hector's in there smoking and the customers are all terrified because they know what's going on. They do finally get them to call Gus to where he is giving free food to fireman staff. And he gets the call, answers it, and as soon as he gets it, he comes back into Los Pollos Hermanos right away. By the time he gets there, they had the door locked. All the customers are gone, but the staff is all there. And before before Gus talks to any of Hector or Hector's people, he tells all of the staff, oh, go ahead and go home. It'll be fine. You'll all get paid for your full shift, regular hours. And he's being very calm and everything. And Lyle tries to stay, but Gus is like super firm with him while being kind of nice about it. He's like, no, no, please do as I ask. You know, it's okay. And so he leaves, goes to talk to Hector in his office. Hector's got his boots up on his desk. He's cleaning shit off of his boots onto Hector's desk, Gus's desk, sorry. And he's telling Gus, you know, you're going to start carrying my stuff now because I've had a problem and you can go and cry to Bolsa and Don Eladio if you want, but you're still going to do what I say, which means, of course, that Bolsa and Don Eladio have no idea what he's doing. And he finally leaves and Gus locks the door after him. And then Gus goes back to just cleaning up the store because the store is actually important to him. You know, it's he really cares about what happens. But while he's cleaning up, he kind of gets this look on his face and he kind of chucks a bit of tinfoil into a trash can from across the room and he smiles. And, you know, he's got an idea.
He's got an idea.
So we switch first to Mike and then we're going to go back to the store. But Mike's at his toll booth and someone pulls up and gives him a paper bag full of money. But before the guy can leave, he tosses it back in the car because he doesn't want it. And he says to the guy, you know, tell him we're square. And the guy leaves. We go back to Los Pollos Hermanos and all the employees are doing their thing. And Gus comes in and he wants to talk to everybody. And he's very, very earnest. And he apologizes to everybody for yesterday and says they all acquitted themselves very well. He says they can have counseling if they need it. He'll make sure it happens. And he also gives them 24 hours of overtime, which I'm like, whoa,
oh,
I like 24 hours of overtime.
I'll have some of that, please. Yeah.
My goodness. Yeah. He said because it's because they all, you know, he knew that they had to take that home with them. So that's why he's going to pay them. But Lyle asks who they are, and Gus says when he was in Michoacán, I think it's like Michoacán.
I'm not sure how it's pronounced. That sounds about right.
Yeah. So back when he was working there, you know, it was a protection racket, and these people came to him and demanded money, and he had to pay them, because that's what you have to do. But when they came back yesterday, they wanted money then, and he told them no. Because this is America. And as soon as he told them that, they knew that they wouldn't get anything out of him. So they all left. And he said, and they will not be back. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't like that level of confidence.
I guess that kind of confidence makes me very uncomfortable because it sounds like something that's just going to come back to bite him.
I know. So we switched from there, and I think you had said something about Kim that you had read in a recap, the way she does stuff.
She's dipping her toes into the illegal stuff, or into maybe crossing the line into slightly illegal, because what she does at the start of her appearance is she is calling every repair person that she can find, every company that does repairs, until she can find the one that has been hired to come and fix Chuck's door that Jimmy broke down. So she cancels that appointment, and then Chuck is, you know, at his house, and who should show up to repair the door but Mike?
Oh, my goodness. And I love this. This is one of those things I love. It's just Mike being all confident and competent, and he... Chuck has no idea, by the way. He completely buys his hook, line, and sinker. And Mike goes to look at the door, and he's like, where do I plug in? He's like, there is no plug in. There's no electricity. I was very clear. And Mike's like, well, that's okay. And he revs his little drill. And Chuck tries to say, no, I made it clear, no power tools. And Mike knows exactly what to say. He says, well, I don't know. That's a morning's work is now going to take 2 days if I have to do this with a hammer and a screwdriver. And he convinces him. And Chuck's like, okay, I guess that's fine. But as soon as Chuck is out of sight, Mike stops pretending to work on things, and he just periodically is revving the drill, and he's so confident. He's not even trying to, like, hide or being kind of furtive about it. Like, Chuck gathers up all his stuff because he's going to go escape upstairs, and as soon as Mike hears his footsteps outside the door, Mike just vrin, 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 and Chuck just runs away. You know, it's just, I love watching all of it, but as soon as Mike knows that Chuck is upstairs, he still revs the drill every once in a while, but now he's taking pictures. And the next scene is he's presenting these pictures to Jimmy over breakfast, and Jimmy is very impressed. Jimmy is just like, man, you did a great job. He specifically likes a picture of an oil lamp sitting on top of a piece of newspaper, a copy of Financial Times, which he thinks is just great. And he tries to get Mike to agree that, yeah, isn't it Chuck a prick? He was a real prick, right? And Mike won't do it. And Jimmy's kind of annoyed about that. And then he asks him, did you actually fix him? Because he doesn't want Chuck to like be complaining about it. And Mike's like, no, I fixed it. I did it right. It was actually kind of nice to fix something for once. So it's like, yeah, you know, he doesn't like doing this, but anyway. So we switch from there. Mike's back in the toll booth. He's reading a copy of Handyman, which I thought was kind of fun. And Gus Fring pulls up because he wants to talk to him about the fact that he sent back the payment. And Mike is just like, he didn't want to take the money. He said, what I did, I didn't do it for you. And Gus says, the man, the one killed for helping the truck driver, perhaps you are trying to correct something that can't be corrected. And so I have in my notes to ask you, what is that about exactly?
Honestly, it's been so long since I watched season two as well, but somehow Mike got tangled up with Hector Salamanca at some point, and somebody, I don't know if it was a civilian or just somebody that was helping out Mike. It was definitely not somebody who deserved it, but they got killed. And That's what Mike has been focusing on this entire time. He has no interest in getting money or power or anything like that. He just wants to make Hector Salamanca suffer. And Gus told him when he previously met him after that whole, you know, tracking him and everything for the gas cap thing, Gus told him that Hector Salamanca is not to be touched because he's going to be the one to kill him. And I can't remember what badass thing he said about killing him.
Right before he leaves, you know, he tells Mike the reason why he didn't want Mike to kill Hector is because a bullet to the head would have been far too humane. So he is really, but he does actually say at one point he recognizes that Mike's awfully good at his job. And he says, like, perhaps in the future you will consider working for me. And Mike doesn't say no. He kind of like smiles for a second and then says something like, could be.
It's something I just keep remembering from this and from Breaking Bad is that Gus Fring is just so freaking charming and intelligent, but at the same time, he's also cold and ruthless. I mean, he is the lengths that he is willing to go to get what he wants, to get this revenge that he is playing out over the course of years is just really kind of horrifying.
And one of the things that I love about that this show is doing and that Breaking Bad certainly did, I mean, he is awful. He is a horrible, scary person. And yet you keep finding yourself wanting to like him. And it's just, I mean, my God, in the final episode, like, that's why it was so terrifying when you thought the bomb didn't kill him. Because you're like, oh, God, he's still alive. And then you see he's actually dead. You're like, oh, thank God, because you wanted him dead because he was so scary. But at the same time, you were just like, oh, I still want to like you, though, you know?
God, I will always, always remember watching that because Nathan and I binged like so many episodes at the end of that series because we were just like, what happens next? And that bomb goes off and he walks through the door and Nathan's sitting next to me, motherfucker!
I thought it's not going to stop. He's going to still be this horrible person. And then he falls over. You're like, oh God. It was just such a perfect, appropriate death scene. I mean, I don't think there's a better death scene out there for a bad guy.
No, it's perfect. Just thematically perfect, but also that wonderful relief of all the other things we have to deal with in the show. We're not going to have to deal with Gus anymore.
Yeah, because I don't know, it was a near thing. That bomb almost didn't kill him. Oh dear. But anyway. Okay, so we switch from there to Jimmy. He's waiting in this courtroom office. Howard comes in, specifically turns off the buzzing lights so that he can escort Chuck in, because Chuck would have not been good with those lights. Nobody's really talking to each other. Kim comes in, everybody sits down. So the woman comes in, and this was who Chuck was talking with earlier. She's not a judge. I guess she's kind of like a prosecuting officer or a disciplinary officer of some sort and everything, but they're discussing the terms of what he's confessed to, and she's spelling it out to him. She's saying, you know, you've waived your right to a trial, but you are admitting your guilt, and you will have to check in with a probation officer, and you'll have to do community service. And if you screw up in the next 12 months, everything that you're confessing for, it will absolutely go to trial. And she is going to give his confession to the New Mexico Bar Association. And that is the thing that Jimmy and Kim had been the most concerned about, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And it's helpful to remember that as much as Jimmy is like, you know, slipping Jimmy and Saul Goodman and kind of a shyster, Chuck is also kind of a con artist too, because right. the previous episode, he's talking to this woman whose title we can't really remember about, you know, all this stuff about Jimmy and like he needs help and, oh, I, you know, just he needs to be put back on the straight and narrow. And, you know, this, it's going to be hard, but it's probably going to be good for him, everything. And he tells the woman, I wish there was another way. And that was when they made the announcement about, you know, to Jimmy about the Bar Association being notified, because Chuck just, he loves the law and he cannot stand the fact that Jimmy is a lawyer, and he wants to stop that by any means necessary. But at the same time, he's conning this woman into thinking that he really just cares for his brother and wants to make sure that he's better. And God,
it's really hard to watch. But there's, okay, so there's this back and forth, right? So when Jimmy had been writing up his confession and Kim had looked at it, she wanted to make sure that he said damaged victim's property. Well, Chuck has a problem with this. He's like, it's not damaged victim's property. It should be destroyed a cassette tape. And Kim's like, that's exactly what it is. Damaged victim's property. That's what it is. And he's like, why be vague? It was a cassette tape. It wasn't like a chair. It wasn't a bed. It wasn't this. It was destroyed a cassette tape. And Howard kind of whispers something to him, and they agree. They wanted to say destroyed item of personal property. And Kim and Jimmy agree to this. And there's this whole, it's very highly focused on, even to the point where the woman hands him the piece of paper so Jimmy can write in there, destroyed item of personal property, and initial it. I'm like, okay, so this is going to be important when they figure out what the loophole is. Mm-hmm. But the woman also wants Jimmy to apologize to Chuck, because she's sincere about all this. Chuck, of course, like you said, is a con artist, but she wants Jimmy to apologize to Chuck, and Jimmy does. I don't know, Chuck maybe likes it, maybe doesn't, I don't know, but all of that is kind of wiped out, any kind of goodwill, when she mentions, okay, there's going to be restitution, and Jimmy says, I want to pay that immediately. He gets out his checkbook. She tells him it's going to be $321, and Chuck's like, no, 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 no. $323.98, which includes the cassette tape, which was destroyed. And everybody's just rolling their eyes. And so Jimmy is irritated and he writes and everything. And it all finishes up and everybody leaves. Jimmy stomps away. But Kim stops Howard and Chuck. And she says she's filing a motion to suppress the tape at the hearing with the Bar Association because she knows there's no way that Chuck didn't make a duplicate. Howard's just like, this is not how discovery works. And Chuck's like, no, 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 it's okay. She lets her know Jimmy actually destroyed the duplicate. The original is safe under lock and key. And he reminds her that, you know, disciplinary hearings run by the Bar Association, their standard of proof is much more lenient than what she's used to, and that the tape will be played. So they leave, she leaves, she meets up with Jimmy, and Jimmy's like, well, 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 and she smiles and goes, bingo. And they look so satisfied and they walk away. And that's the end of the episode.
Oh my goodness. I love the fact that she is, I mean, she wants to be a good lawyer. Boy, she is good at some of the underhanded stuff. Like, oh, yeah. Oh, scary yeah. good at some of this.
Oh yeah. And I don't, you know, I think in a way it's probably not even underhanded. Like, I don't know. It's like she would be, she wouldn't want to do anything actually illegal, but I think she's certainly getting better at being like, well, this isn't nice, but I really want to win, you know? So that's it. That's where we end the episode.
Oh, boy. I'm enjoying this. Every episode that I watch, I'm enjoying it a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it's, boy, it's not taking long for me to get back into it. You know, I was, you know, when you put something away for a while and you're like, I really should jump back in, but it's just hard to like get the willpower and everything. And now I'm like, oh, I think I'll watch another episode tonight. But I guess that will wrap us up for the week. So make sure to check out pixelatedgeek.com for all the book reviews, the movie reviews, the comic book reviews, the photo galleries. We, like I said, we will have a link on the site for all the Hugo nominees and the winners. It'll list who the winners are, and it will link to all of the reviews, and that's reviews of books and novellas and novelettes and short stories and TV shows and movies. So there is so many reviews on there. You should definitely check them out if you're running to like catch up and everything. But all of that and more, pixelatedgeek.com. So we had said last week that we would have a Night Vale episode today. That was wrong because we are not always really good at counting. So
yes, the Night Vale episode as time of this recording airs tomorrow. Yes, exactly.
So we will have a Nivelle episode next week, and we will probably also have an episode of Better Call Saul, maybe, because I've also said that I am going to watch Nope, because Catherine is in the process of rewatching it because she liked it so much.
Every time I take a look at it, I find more things that I'm enjoying about this movie. It's just nice. It's just cool. It is a cool movie and not nearly as gross as I was thinking it was going to be.
Good. I like that. I'm prepared for a little gross. That's always fine. It's nice to know when they don't get egregious about it. Anyway, that or whatever else distracts us. So one way or the other, we will talk to everybody in 1 week.
Talk to y'all later. Best graphic novel was
Oh, that's okay. That's fine. Whatever. Fine.